D-Maze Vingen and Donick 102.5, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. The Predators are back in action tonight against the Flyers, a 6 o'clock central puck drop, 5 o'clock pregame, right here on 102.5, The Game. But let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our dear friend, Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Freeman, who is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, before we start, talking hockey, let's get a quick Toronto vibe check one night ahead of a potential World Series clinching game for the Toronto Blue Jays.
I'm trying to get tickets for tomorrow night, and I'm deciding if I'm going to have to take out a third mortgage or a fourth one.
I have to imagine, though, after the heartbreaking 18-inning loss, to bounce back last night, even if the Blue Jays lose, I imagine Trey Savage doesn't have to pay for a meal again in the city of Toronto. But I the roller coaster of emotions, I imagine, Elliot, between the loss in 18 innings and the win last night, I can't imagine what that was like.
You know what? I have to say this, Adam. Like, this whole run in the playoffs has been found money. Like, sometimes you go in and you're like, okay, this is our year, and we got to win, or we think we're going to win. Nobody in Toronto thought this at the beginning of the year. And, you know, but the one thing I will say is, like, this is a city and a country that loves its baseball. Like, so the company I work for, Rogers, owns the Blue Jays, and their TV numbers generally do pretty well. But as they got into it and we realized they were good enough to be at least in the race, like, people were on the bandwagon early. I watched almost, like, every Blue Jay game I could watch this summer, I watched. And I was hardly alone. And so then, like, you know, when they won the division, like, people were ecstatic. They were like, this is a bonus. And they beat the Yankees. And I was actually at, I've been to two playoff games. The first one was Savage's first start, where he no-hit the Yankees and struck out 11 and 5 2/3. And, like, people were like, this is awesome. And, you know, then they beat Seattle, and this is awesome. Like, the fact that they're here, like, honestly, people were disappointed they lost that game. And there were a lot. And, like, I went on the air the next day on my regular hit, my hockey hit, and the two hosts, Mike Puta and Matt Marchese, they both fell asleep, and I, like, trashed them. I said, how can you guys be doing a show in this city and fall asleep during that game? But, like, honestly, Adam, I think up here, it's like people have been enjoying the ride. It's so surprising and so unexpected, but this city's going to be bonkers tomorrow. It's going to be nuts here. And if they lose, Game 7 is up against Hockey Night and Saturday Night. It's one of those, like I said last week, I can go on the air and say anything because I know nobody's going to be watching.
I can only imagine what it's going to be like tomorrow. That'll be fun to watch even from afar. Let's turn our attention back to the NHL and the Predators. Yeah. On Tuesday was the NHL's Frozen Frenzy. All 32 teams were in action. The Predators lost to Tampa Bay, and I was watching bits and pieces of other games. I, for example, watched Connor Bedard have his first career hat trick for the Chicago Blackhawks. I watched the Utah Mammoth play a great game against Edmonton. The Mammoth lost, but they're still atop the Central Division. And as I'm watching all of these games, and more specifically the teams in the Predators division, Elliot, I'm wondering if the Predators will soon be the bottom feeders of this division. Chicago seems to be figuring it out. Utah looks great. Perhaps the Mammoth are ahead of schedule, but they've been building for this for a long time. How concerned should the Predators be that they may be the bottom feeder in the Central Division for years to come?
I don't know that I would say, like, I don't like the phrasing of for years to come, Adam.
Fair enough.
Because I think that in this league, things can change fast. And, you know, we've seen a lot of teams that we thought had staying power and they were awful or didn't last. And we've seen other situations where, we thought teams were going to be terrible for a long time and they really got going. But like the one thing I do see is that, you know, we up here, you know, we've been on Calgary. Calgary is a team that's never allowed itself. The Calgary team, they had a playoff drought. I think it was 8 years around the turn of the century. And they had a playoff drought that was about 5 years, about 15 years ago. And they are scarred by that. This year, they're not. They play hard. They just don't have the natural goal scoring. Like, they never cheat you on effort. They just can't score. And one of the things I've been saying is, you know, they don't believe in they do not believe in tanking. And I said, I think that the worst thing that they could do is do a short-term fix. This is a great draft. They've got multiple picks. The hardest thing to find is scoring. The easiest place to find that is the top of the draft. I think if Calgary has to let it naturally occur, they shouldn't look for short-term fixes. I actually think the same thing about the Predators. You know, Brady Martin, he didn't last this time, but that's fine. You can see that you guys have a player there, and you're going to have a player there for years to come. I think if it happens naturally and you get to a situation where you have to say, look, we're going for another one of these studs at the top of the draft, I think Nashville's going to have no choice but to do it. You know, the one thing I think you guys have as an advantage, and believe me, I know people don't like hearing this, especially people who run teams. Even though it didn't work out or hasn't worked out yet, Adam, last year showed you that Nashville is a destination. Don't ever forget that. Don't ever forget that. And that one is not working out as anyone hoped. And I think that if you have to sit there and say, okay, we'll take the high pick again this year, even though it's not what we want, you have to do it unless some unbelievable deal drops on your lap that I don't see coming. You have to do it. And you have to say, look, if it means we reload with another young stud, that's what we're going to have to do.
Elliot, as I look at the Predators roster, the one player who stands out who could help the Predators get some solid assets if they go down that route is Ryan O'Reilly. He's off to a good start. He's a center. We know how hard those are to find. He's a proven winner. All of those things. I recall you last season reporting that the Predators were treating Ryan O'Reilly as if he had a no trade or no movement clause in his contract, although he does not have either of those in his contract. Mm-hmm. Do you think they're approaching this season the same way with Ryan O'Reilly? If this season goes sideways and people call about Ryan O'Reilly, do you anticipate Barry Trotz treating O'Reilly the same way you reported he did last season?
Yes, I do. I do see that. You cannot muck around with veterans like that unless Ryan O'Reilly was to do something so egregious that the Predators say we don't owe this guy any respect anymore, which I don't see happening, Adam. Then yes, I do expect that to be the case. Now, there is a slight difference this year than last year, and that's purely the time of his contract. Last year, he had 2+ years to go. This year, he has 1+ year to go in his deal. I always wonder, does that change at least the player's opinion about his future in any way, shape, or form? But I have no reason to believe that the Predators will treat it any differently. And I also think that, I still do think there will be interest in O'Reilly when and if the time comes. You know, last year they asked him about Toronto. I don't think he was crazy about that idea. He'd been there, done that. He chose Nashville for a reason. I believe that a team like New Jersey would covet a player like O'Reilly. He's a player that they have had some interest in for a long time. But I think there would be others. But as far as I'm concerned, they are treating him the same way.
Now, Elliot, watching this team and getting an opportunity to watch other teams, especially during the frozen frenzy, hockey just looks a little bit different when I watch those teams, the better mm-hmm. teams this season or even last season, than what it does here in Nashville. And mm-hmm. I know we're talking about they need more goals, they need more goal scorers, but is it that simple for this team at least? I know other teams may be in different situations or whatnot, but for this team, is it as simple as they just need more goals, or is it more complex than that?
I mean, the short answer, Derek, is you're right. They need more goals. But as you know, it's always more complex. Like when I see the Predators, they're just not as quick as some other teams. Mm-hmm. And to me, quick, Derek, is two things. It's number one, how quick you are on your feet. But it's also two, how quick you move with the puck, right? Like, do you move, like, if you're not the fastest team, but do you move the puck quickly? Like, when you're going up and down the ice, is the puck getting there quick before the D can set up? I just don't, like, a lot of teams in the NHL, when they're struggling, they look slow. And I think that, especially when Yossi's not in the lineup, because he can do so many incredible things, whether it's skating with the puck or moving with the puck, I think that's an issue. And as I think everybody knows, you know, the Predators are still trying to find that great distributor. They got a lot of great finishers up front, but they don't have a lot of great distributors. And I think that just at times, I think that's the thing that, like, this is a fast league, Derek. Tempo matters, whether it's with your feet or how you move the puck. And there's just a bunch of teams right now that are quicker than the Predators are. And I think that's probably what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Elliot Friedman is with us. So, Elliot, along those lines, tell our listeners what they'll be seeing with Philadelphia. They have a familiar face coaching in Rick Tocchet.
Yeah.
Predator fans certainly remember him when he was behind the Vancouver bench. And the first thing that leaps out to all of us stat-wise is that they have done what a Rick Tocchet team usually does well, and that's defend.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with his defense core in the preseason. He didn't like how a lot of them played, and I think he kind of put a lot of them on notice, really. But I think also as a group, they've kind of defended better. Now, I think the thing, too, is they just played – it's going to be interesting because they just played a really emotional game. They played Pittsburgh during that night, and that's their big rival. And the league is better when Pittsburgh and Philadelphia hate each other. It's just a better place. And boy, did they hate each other the other night. You know, Philly's got a couple of really interesting, talented guys. One of them is Trevor Zegras, who they got from Anaheim. He was right in the middle of all the fighting at the end of the overtime the other night. They've got Matvei Mishkov, who was a first-round pick a couple of years ago, a supremely talented guy that they're kind of always battling with over, you know, how he plays and just becoming a more effective two-way player. They've got some real young offensive talent on that team they are really trying to cultivate. And so, but the thing is, like Philly's kind of where, like, some teams find it dangerous.
We lost Elliot Friedman there. We will work to get him back. But, Willie, why don't you finish Elliot's thought? You are preparing to call the game between the Predators and Flyers. So in your preparation, what stands out to you about the Predators' opponent tonight?
Well, I think the thing that we'll be watching for is Trevor Zegras. He has played six games in this building, and he's got 8 points. So he is quickly jumping in. And I remember vividly, and Elliot was touching on it, a TNT broadcast when Rick Tocchet was doing the studio work. And it was in the aftermath of the play that Trevor Zegras flipped the puck over, you know, that great creative pass he made from directly behind the net, looped it over the top of the net for his teammate to bat it in. And it got so many great reactions on social media. Everybody was buzzing about it, rightfully so. But I remember Tocchet's take on it was, well, that's great, but what about the rest of his game? Like, are you trying to make plays that just end up getting clicks? Or are you trying to win? And once he, you know, fast forward a couple years, now he's coaching him. He asks him basically that same question. But he seems to have come a ways. And it looks like Tockett, who is certainly not afraid to take away ice time or and whatnot, he's demanding. It looks like Zegras is adding layers to his game. So I'm looking for that tonight.
Let's welcome back in Elliot Freeman. Sorry about that, Elliot.
The Dodgers fans, they got to the show. They wiped me out.
A Mookie Betts fan.
No, you know what?
I think
the concern with the Flyers and the Predators are probably looking at this is, like, that's a team that kind of tore it down. You know, they traded their franchise player, Claude Giroux, and it's tough to get back. And they've been accumulating young pieces. And like we said, they've got some good young players there. But it's that climb. It terrifies teams. And, you know, I think that's, like, Philly is, they look like they're on their way back. They look like they're in the right direction. But it's a challenge to get there.
Elliot, you touched on Utah, but I know on your podcast you went into a little more detail, and it does look like after all of that, and you've talked about this process over and over, it seems to take forever. But is the light going on there? Are you thinking they've even made a bigger jump than you anticipated before the season?
I think the hardest jump, Willie, to make in this league is the jump from like 20 to 12. Because 20 is out of the playoffs and 12 is in the playoffs. I think, like, they've been right there for a couple years now. They just missed. Like, one of the things I disagree about with the commissioner with the most is I think they should go to expanded playoffs. Like, my idea is the first six teams in each conference get in, and then 10 and 7, 9 and 8 have a two-day playoff. The higher-seeded team gets both games at home, and the first game, there's no overtime. You just play it to 60 minutes. If you lose the first game, you have to win the second game. If you tie the first game, then somebody has to win the second game. And if the two games, they're split or they're both tied, then you play sudden-death overtime. Whoever scores the goal goes into the main round of the playoffs. Like, that's my idea. I want that. And the commissioner hates it. And he will fight it to the end, to the death, as long as he's the commissioner of the league. And one of the things he talks about is that he believes that they have a league where the regular season really matters. And it's hard to make the playoffs. And he's right about that. I can't argue with that, even though I hate the fact that they don't do this. But, like, to me, that, like, you look at how many years, like, Utah's been there, like, been in the race in January and February, and then in April, they're out. And some of that was not their own doing. They were just in a crazy, chaotic situation. Number one, their young players are finally gaining the experience. No, like, this Cooley kid who they just signed, like, he's an incredible talent. Their young players are gaining the experience. They filled in the holes. Like, they were a really small team. You could push them around. They added some guys with a bit more juice, some edge in some of those roles. They look really good, Willie, but, you know, we're at game 10. You know, like, they've got to prove, like, that's one thing. They've been 20. They've been 17. They've been 18. Now you got to be 12 or you got to be 15. Like, to me, that jump is the hardest jump in the league to make.
Okay, so they just locked in Logan Cooley. And the Avalanche also within the Predators division locked up Marty Natchez. You guys have tried to analyze as best you can this changing market. It's changed so drastically. Did it fall in the line to what you thought it would take to sign those two guys?
Cooley, actually, I was wondering if Cooley would cost them more. You know, there's a couple things I look at, Willie. How many years until unrestricted free agency? And Cooley had four. So it knocks his nut. Like, the big numbers start to come in when you hit unrestricted free agency. So, like, I think that Cooley contract is going to age spectacularly well for the Mammoth. But it wasn't until year five of this deal he was going to be a UFA. The Natchez one, actually, if you would have told me, like a year ago that his number was 11-5. I don't think I would have thought that. But now, like, that's where we are, Willie. The numbers are exploding. Like I'll tell you this, like, you guys were lucky the opportunity to sign Yossi was there when it was. Because if you guys were signing Yossi now, like, he'd be making $3 million a year more than he's making now. Like, it's the things have really changed. And there are still some battles going on out there. Like, I think the teams are starting to concede, Willie. They're starting to see that, like, Dallas, Thomas Harley, they got Harley for just under 10.6, another guy that you know really well. And I would have bet you a year ago, they're like, there's no way we're going to be signing him for that. But now the world has moved and the world has shifted. And for the best players, the teams are realizing. The one that's going to be interesting is going to be Kempe, because I've heard that one, like, I think the Kings have to sign him. I do. But I think they've really put up a battle over what the number will be. And he's older than Natchez by about 2.5 years. So that's advantage Kings. But you look at the head-to-head production, that's advantage Kempe. And also, like, they need him. So I think the teams are bending, Willie. I don't know who's going to be the one that is going to be the big one that you guys are going to have to deal with down the road. Like, a lot of your top players are either older or they're locked in. Like, it might not be until Brady Martin before you really have to deal with this.
Elliot, before we let you go, when we spoke last week about Steven Stamkos, you yes. wondered if there will come a point when he and Barry Trotz sit down and discuss what's best for both parties. I asked Trotz about that Tuesday, and although he mm-hmm. said he is not trying to do anything now, he did not dismiss it out of hand. So what yeah. do you think the market could be for Stamkos, especially at a reduced rate?
Well, I think this. There's a couple of things here, Adam. Well, first of all, I'm not, like, one of the things about the like, I really respect what Barry does when he comes on your show. Like, he knows that the hockey fans of Nashville expect him to give them the straight goods, and he's a pretty honest guy. And I think sometimes when you're a manager, you can't say everything you want to say, but I think he understands he's speaking towards his fan base, and he doesn't give everything away, but he lets everybody know what's going on. So I wasn't surprised about that he didn't, like, run away from it, because there's no point in running away from it. That's number one. Number two, I think this. If anything has been proven here by the time, by what's happened with Stamkos in Nashville to this point, is that he needs someone who can get him the puck. That's not an insult. Stamkos is a scorer. He needs to be in a position or be on a team where he has someone who can facilitate to him, like Kucherov did for all those years in Tampa. So that's number one. Like, nobody is going to be trading for Steven Stamkos, and he's not going to be waiving his no trade to go anywhere where, if it comes to that, Adam, where there isn't a player that he can look at and say, all right, that solves the problem that unfortunately we're having in Nashville. So that's number one. Number two, then it becomes a factor of, okay, what does Nashville want in return? Is Nashville willing to retain salary? This is year 2 of 4, so they'd have to retain for 2 more years. How do the Predators feel about that? Then it becomes what everybody's willing to do to make it work. But to me, the number one thing is Stamkos has to be willing to do it. He has control. But the key is, and this is kind of out of the Predators and Stamkos' hands, there has to be a team that's willing to do this, that has players available that can fix the problem he's dealing with here.
Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Friedman has been our guest on DMA's Ving and Adonic. He joins us every Thursday during hockey season and is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, enjoy the World Series game tomorrow. Please don't burn your life savings on a Game 6 ticket if you can help it.
I will. You know what? Adam, you're a parent now.
My kid
wants to go. We make irrational decisions to make our kids happy.
Ain't it the truth, Elliot?
Yes.
Enjoy the game tomorrow.
All right, take care.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will react to what Elliot Freeman had to say. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.